Continuing now in this lecture about imagination and processing it, let's realize then that auditing becomes as difficult as the pre-clear is unwilling to play a game. This does not say immediately, you see, that auditing is playing a game. Auditing actually has definite goal in mind and so forth. But his inability to treat life as what it is, a game, is immediately reflected in the auditing session. And his reaction to the auditor is very much his reaction to life. On the day when we could best approximate the beingness and livingness of a person with processes, on that day, we became very able to process people. So let's recognize that the easiest thing to see in a pre-clear is his willingness to play a game. This universe is a game. Many people have entirely lost sight of that fact. It is rather unserious, to tell you the factual truth. But as they are more and more convinced, and they understand, I don't say convinced of the seriousness of it, no, as they are more and more convinced, just that, I refer you to 8008 doctorate tapes. They are less and less free. Conviction is to a large degree sort of a fence that gets built around a person. And they are less and less free. Less and less free to what? To play a game. And by being less and less free to play the game, they are more and more enmeshed in that thing called a game. Until we get the unhappy view, for instance, of the stadium line whitener. You know, he's been hired to come in and whiten all the lines of a football stadium, you know, and so forth. And he's working out there in the hot sun. That's no game to him. Football is not a game to him. Football is something which makes it possible for him to get a few bucks so that he can eat and feed the family, you see. It's not a game. Or we could imagine a football player no longer able to really play football as a game. But when he walked off the football field, why, he was still involved in being a football player. He would really be somebody who had been pushed down to the level of pawn and toward broken piece in this business of football. Thus we get somebody standing up in the boxing ring and going round, round, round. It was good fun to Joe Louis once upon a day to get in and pow, you see, and knock somebody flat. And so on. He didn't worry about this. He was terrifically relaxed about it. It was, in essence and actually, the fight game. And that's all it was. It was the game. And he had a very light view of the horrible consequences of what happened to his opponents and so forth. But the more men he saw go down, the more he was convinced. The more men that hit him, the more he was convinced. The more walls of sound hit the center of that arena, the more he was convinced that this was a serious business. And finally, Joe Louis became a pawn who actually never left that square of canvas. More and more times he never left that square of canvas until he was walking around on that square of canvas all the time, and on that day he lost his last fight. And that was the end of his fight career. They less and less leave the arena, you might say, and more stay in the arena, and we see this as a manifestation of getting stuck on the time track. What is this thing of stuck on the time track but a problem of not having left the playing field? They're still being that pawn. Now, not many units ago, we had a student who was a very well-drilled soldier. That is, this person was a woman, and therefore you wouldn't have suspected this person to have been a soldier as such. But she was so well-drilled. That was what was fabulous. She would obey all of the orders, and she would do everything just right, and nothing happened, nothing happened, nothing happened. The only trouble was she wasn't obeying the orders. She was just running on a circuit, and she'd walk through this. But she was terrifically well-drilled. What playing field hadn't she left? Well, I hate to ring in parascientology on you, but the actual fact is she was in a between lives area, stuck in a vat. He'd sure never left that playing field. That had evidently been a good game. space opera or something. And she had gotten into that game and gotten more and more enclosed in that game, and finally she had just never left the game. Well, here she was, walking around Earth without ever having left another game. Was she here? No, that's the exact manifestation. They have the feeling they're not here. They're still a pawn in another game. But remember, they are always a pawn in another game when they haven't left it. That game is boss. Now, many a king has become the pawn of his own kingdom. So it doesn't matter what the station of this individual was in the game he has not left. And you very often get onto triumphs as stuck spots on the track, but this does not evade this definition. They're a triumph, all right. They wanted approval, wanted approval, wanted approval, wanted approval, until they just stuck right there getting approval. They don't leave the area. They're stuck on the track again. Well, some quantity seems to have disappeared out of the person, and we wouldn't say that it was an imagination, quantity of, which is evaporated from the individual. No, it's just the fact that he has so ringed himself and surrounded himself with the bric-a-brac and materiel of the game itself that he no longer can see past this bric-a-brac and materiel. His uniform becomes not that thing in which you play a game, but it becomes the immediate barrier, the immediate horizon of existence. See that? We see this, for instance, in an admiral or in somebody who is very successful at playing a game. Boy, is it serious. Give you some example of it. One day I was a division navigator, navigating for a division, and one of the boys had insisted that when the ship was being fixed up and so forth, that we have glass panels put across the navigator's desk in such a way that you could read the chronometer directly through them. Well, I got awfully tired of trying to read the chronometers at all because they were Navy chronometers, and I was navigating on Air Force watches. And Navy chronometers, they had to be changed. They had errors in them. You set your Air Force watches every morning, you see, by Arlington. And they were perfectly accurate Hamiltons. And so I just had these old chronometers moved out of there, and here was a nice big empty hole. So the big hole, you see, beautifully glass paneled and black velvet and so forth. And I looked at this hole. I thought, that's gorgeous. So I got myself a nice goldfish bowl and turned it upside down on them to have a perfect crystal ball. And it was a standard gag. Then somebody come in and ask me in fog at night and so forth, where are we? I say, well, you can look as well as I can and point to this thing. See? So it was enough for somebody to come in, and if I didn't know exactly what we were doing or it was hard to find out, it was just a gesture at the crystal ball. And one day, the admiral wandered in to the navigating shack and so forth. He said... what are we using here, so forth? And I said, well, here's the dead reckoning tracer, and here are your feathometer logs, and here's this and that, and the radar room, and the CIC, and so forth. And every time I mentioned one of these things, they were all new contraptions that they hadn't had aboard sailing vessels, so he was very disinterested. And so I finally attracted his interest by simply saying, he just wasn't giving me any interest, you see. I mean, I'd say CIC, Combat Information Center, which is a terrifically complex organization of fed information into a central spot, worked like a brain. And this was blank. I pointed to the crystal ball, and I said, well, that actually, between ourselves, sir, is what I use usually. Expecting from an old sea dog, you see, anybody who'd been a navigator, he'd get a good laugh out of this. So he'd walk out of the shack feeling good. He walked out of the shack all right. And a little while later, the skipper found me down in the officer's wardroom, and he was almost incapable of restraining his mirth. He said, you know, I've just had a complaint about you. The admiral had come up to the captain's bridge and had told the captain that the captain had better keep an eye on me because I wasn't using modern equipment. Now, you find that incredible. It's out of your field of reality as it was out of mine. Well, he had a tremendously wonderful laugh at the old boy for a long time. He was an admiral. It was no longer a game. Nothing was a game. It was all deadly serious. And he registered every datum as a serious datum. He had lost his power to reject. And you can say that about anybody who is spinny. He's lost his power to reject a datum. You give him a datum, he can't get rid of it. You can just see him sit in there and fight with it for a couple of minutes and then kind of give up. You tell him a funny story and he goes off wondering, well, you know, that really might be true. That might be so that birds do occasionally communicate with each other, and therefore, when the little mother bird said, well, I don't cheat, but I'll hold still while you do, you know, actually the birds could communicate like this, but, I don't know. Let's see. See, you just can't get rid of the datum. Being unable to get rid of the datum, being unable to get rid of the particles which are composed in the datum and so forth, he gets stuck in time. So this guy just gets all balled up on the time track in every direction. He's lost his ability to play the game. He's lost his ability to reject the datum. He's lost his ability to leave the playing field. The greatest symptom of this, though, is he's lost his ability to imagine. He can't imagine himself somewhere else. And there's the first place where imagination shows up. When Van Gogh exteriorized, he's just a little bit down the line on imagination because he can't imagine himself someplace else. Mm-hmm. How is he going to get any reality anyhow? He can't imagine it's there. If you can't imagine reality is there, it's not going to be there. I know that sounds horrible. If you can't imagine a bus going down the street, you won't ever see it. I swear that the only thing that saves a barbarian when he walks into this society and looks around is his imagination is so fluid. He can learn the society with great rapidity. That's fascinating. Now, men do not see things which they cannot imagine. They just don't see them. You get somebody who is strength is the strength of 10 because his heart is pure or something of the sort. He doesn't see any evil around. He can't imagine any evil. He could if he put his imagination to it. The guy's probably already stuck on the track being so doggone pure. And he's unable to embrace it. If he had a wide, fluid imagination, he could see evil, he could see good. He could also imagine that evil was good and good was evil. He'd be able to mix any factor he wants, unscramble them again, toss them up in the air, catch them in his hat, sort them out, and put them right back where they were before with no inconvenience to his brain. No slightest inconvenience. You get a preclear who hasn't left the playing field, and he doesn't have imagination. He doesn't have imagination. As far as he can tell, he's been impressed with the super reality of things, and so he'd better not imagine anything because every time he did, there was a consequence. And so there are purposes and reasons for, consequences of. You could just ask him to match terminal. This is not a process. It doesn't lead any place. It's one of these test processes. You could ask him to match terminal just for test, the consequences of. If you want to see some automaticity, swing around in the bank. Everything he's doing are depending upon everything else he's doing, which is all dependent upon not doing it because of the consequences which would happen if he did do it. And he's got to have reasons for, reasons for, reasons for, reasons this way, reasons that way, actually significances, significances, significance. So he can add all these things up to no consequence. See? If he could ever add anything up to no consequence, he'd be free that level. Fellow gets out into this state, fellow who hasn't left the playing field, who's lost his power to play the game, whose imagination is shot, walks down the street out here, and he walks along, and all of a sudden, as he's walking along, he sees that an ant is in his path, and before he can stop his foot has crushed this ant. He walks on up the street, and he's kind of unhappy about the whole thing, not because he's killed an ant so much, as because there's some kind of a silly rhyme has come up. If you step on ants, why, it's going to rain, or something of that sort. And he's haunted by a datum which has suddenly slid in this way. And he goes walking on up the street, or does he, or is he still back trying to stop his foot from hitting this ant? See, he isn't free to imagine himself elsewhere because there may be consequences in everything he does. There may be consequences in everything he has in his pockets, so he fills them full of scraps of paper. Anything he sees, you see, may have consequences connected to it, so it had better be added in and held on to until it correlates with everything. And so we get a continual operating bullpen. He is an animated bullpen. No data is really coordinated with any other data, but it's all there. See? He's like a textbook with his pages all torn up and wadded together. But if he wanted to, and if he had time to, he could straighten them all out and read them. Now, the best thing he'll want you to do as an auditor is to straighten out those pages so he can read them. He wants to overhaul data. And you, if you're very foolish indeed, will let him overhaul data. He can overhaul data forever because he's accumulated about 76 trillion years worth of data. And that's a few data. For instance, let us say, in the course of 10 million years, going into parascientology again, there were 150,000 different marks of spaceship used in a certain galaxy. He knows how to run every one of them. So you start unscrambling data, and he'll carefully overhaul all the data about the spaceships before he gets through. Take a long time, more time you've got. The simpler thing to do is to free up his ability to imagine. A man who cannot exteriorize simply is unable to imagine that he is elsewhere. A man who does not have sonic cannot imagine that his facsimile is talking. A man who does not have visio cannot imagine that there is a sight to be seen in the facsimile. Things are as real to him as he can imagine them. And he can vanquish things as easily as he can imagine they're not there. Of course, he's had failures with his imagination. He's been going down the road totally convinced while he was being something that he had better unimagine a tree out of his road. You know, he'd better disimagine this tree. And he hit it. Bad invalidation there. Some other factor was added up. He got into a body, you see, and the body could see the tree. And now he tries to unimagine the tree, but it's the body that's seeing the tree. So, of course, his body hits the tree. So he is now convinced that the tree was there and that he didn't unimagine it. Actually, if he'd been going along all by himself, which is what he thought he was doing, if he'd been sailing along all by himself, he would have seen a tree in front of me. All he had to do was unimagine the tree was there, and he would have passed right straight through empty space. See, that's all by himself. Now we get somebody who sees nothing but blackness. Well, it's very easy for him to imagine blackness because this universe is full of it. But it's not easy for him to imagine anything else. And so he has that difficulty, and of course he doesn't have visio. Now you say then it's all imagination of somebody exteriorizing. Then it's all an imaginary process after all. I knew it was all imaginary. I knew it. The whole business of existence is imaginary when you glance at it from that. You say, I like to have something solid to hold in my hand. Okay, it'll be as solid as you can imagine that it's solid, no solider. And if you have gotten yourself into an imagination that then is automatically imagining everything that goes on, such as this universe, you've gotten yourself into a series of machines which put the universe there, and it's very solid. Only it's your enemy, because you no longer are imagining it into being and out of being again. Should follow this very closely. From being a condemned subject, imagination comes up into a first-rank subject. Fluidity of thinking is another way of expressing imagination. I already told you that imagination was in itself a bad word. I'm using it throughout these last two lectures here, this lecture and the last one, as just what you think it is. You know, you and I know what imagination is. We take the word apart and we find its image in ation. And imagination has nothing to do with images. See? Imagination is the fluidity of conceiving that there is a reality. If we define it that way, it becomes very comprehensible. All right. Now, where do we enter the problem? What is the process that we could immediately address to a preclear so as to free up his imagination? If we do that, we will get him playing a game. Of course, we have this basic thing. He's pretending he doesn't know. That's his best defense, and that's the way he gets randomity, and that's the way he can engage in conversation. The only way that you and Joe can talk together is because while you're talking, he imagines he doesn't know what you're going to say. And when you're talking to him, you imagine you don't know what he's got to say. And when you get rather bad off and you get a little bit garbled, you get impatient, you know, and you say, well, now I know what he's going to say. And right away, conversation becomes a bore to you. And you don't have to listen to him. You know what he's going to say anyhow. You'll very often find people who are having a rough time with imagination. They're not down to the bottom yet, you see. They're just having a rough time. And they will say, well, people bore me so I know everything they're going to say before they say it and so on. They've gotten scared to pretend they don't know what the guy is going to say so they can listen to him. And they just omit the step. They've gotten frantic about shutting off their knowingness and so forth. And so conversation becomes boring. All right. Now, where would you run this? Could you just run this as a concept? Well, I suppose you could, but I don't think it'd do very much, because it would demonstrate only this, that the fellow was doing it. Well, he really kind of knows he's doing it anyhow. You don't have to convince him of that if you don't want to. What you want to convince him of is that he is free to imagine consecutively many things with no effect. So an immediate thing would be this. You could say, imagine something, and now imagine it again, And he's liable to have an awful time and argue with you sometimes about what imagination is and how bad it is and so forth. But you just say you imagine something. Well, he said, I can imagine it, but it really isn't original. And you say, well, where did you get the idea that an imagination had to be original? It doesn't have to be original. Just imagine something, you know. The fellow says, you mean make a picture of something? You mean make a mock-up? And you say, no, not necessarily. Just go on, imagine something. And the fellow finally kind of beaten, and he says, well, all right, I'll imagine that a dragon is coming in the front door. And you say, all right, now just imagine the dragon's coming in the front door. Get that? Fellow, yeah. You say, what happened? Oh, I don't know. Your vague impression. I don't get good mock-ups or anything. I get a vague impression. Well, all right. Well, imagine he's coming in the door again. Okay, what happened? Well, you have a vague impression. Dragon coming in the door. All right, well, now imagine it again. What happened? Well, I got this... it was a little brighter that time, but it's just a vague impression. What are you trying to do? Well, just you imagine it again. What happened? I mean, nothing happened. You say, well, all right, imagine it again. What happened? Nothing. I get the impression of the dragon coming in the door. It's all that happened. You say, well, what happened? What happened to you? Nothing. Nothing. Why, nothing happened to me. You, for the first moment, engaged his interest in this game, you see. You say, all right, imagine the dragon coming in the door again. Now, what happened? Nothing. I'll imagine the dragon coming in the door again. What happened? He's shooting flame out of his mouth. You know, he busts the door apart and walks in. Yeah, that's what happened. And you say, oh, well, now what happened to you? Oh, nothing, nothing at all. How could anything happen to me? It's imaginary. That demonstrates to you, you know, you'd hate to have that dragon come to life, so you just go on and work at it until you do get the dragon to come to life. You just say, all right, imagine the dragon. Imagine that again. Yeah, yeah. Imagine again. Now he seems kind of bored with it. He got it up to three dimensions. It isn't quite safe. So you ask him again, all right, now what happened to you? What happened to the room? Well, nothing. All right, have him come in the door again. Now what happened to you? Nothing. Nothing happened to me at all. Dragon's brighter. In other words, we just keep this up and have him imagine this same item that he has already picked on and imagine it over and over and over by a duplication of creative processes. Creative processing by duplication, in other words. But we aren't trying to create it because the dragon will take away the lumbago he's got or anything of that sort. We're just trying to show to him what? Nothing happens. That's all we're trying to teach this boy. And we just teach him on this basis. Nothing happens. Now, what do you think you do in opening procedure? You show the fellow can follow your orders, regardless of what they are, without any severe consequences. And that's what we mean in this instance by nothing happens. He doesn't have any consequences as a result of having followed your orders. It doesn't upset him. He finds out that there is no mysterious spook who is standing in front of his face that slapped him because he followed your orders. He doesn't get a sudden lumbago somatic because he followed your orders. His piercing headache doesn't turn on anymore because he followed your orders. It did for a while, but it doesn't now. And so on. So that any process should go toward a no effect and then confirm this no effect level. New direction of processing possibly to you, but it shouldn't be. You are so used to watching for the effect. You know, you do this and then it creates an effect. And then you do it again, it creates an effect. And you do it again, it creates an effect. And when it no longer really creates much of an effect, you are prone to abandon the process. Look, you have not arrived. You're quitting before you got there. What you want to do is do it to him many times, demonstrating to him that there is no consequence to having done it, not even boredom. So if you're going to follow through such a process as this, or such a process as opening procedure by duplication, or any other type of process, what is your indicated line? Your indicated line is to do it to no effect, and then repeat the no effect many times, till he's utterly convinced that there's no effect going to happen. But do you tell him you're trying to produce a no effect here? No effect, no effect? No, you sure don't. You never mention it to him at all. And he all of a sudden becomes what? Safe. He's safe. Look, he can imagine without getting his head torn off. He can imagine without getting slapped. He can imagine without being expelled from school. A lot of things come off as locks when you do a process of this character. Lots of things come off as locks, such as the lies he told Papa and the lies he told Mom and the lies he told teachers. He's got lying and imagination all mixed up. I knew a writer one time that had imagination and lying finally completely entangled with him, and after that, he wrote the doggondest plot you ever saw in your life, but he never wrote a different plot. He was safe with that plot because that plot had been used so long that it was damn near true. That plot was a Western plot, and he just kept on writing that plot endlessly. He didn't dare write any other kind of plot. And what broke this down was I actually ran a series of locks where he'd been punished for lying. I overtly ran the incidents, you see. It was back in 1951 this happened. All right. Where does imagination bog down? Imagination bogs down by being compared with what other people consider reality and by being disintegrated into a necessity to agree with the physical universe. Agreement with the physical universe is then deteriorative only where it inhibits an individual's ability to imagine. And when an individual can imagine freely, he not only sees the physical universe, but every other universe that he wishes to come into contact with. When he can imagine freely, he can communicate freely and so forth. He's pretending all the time he's alive, but the pretense itself becomes a fact. He's pretending all the time he's alive. He's pretending he's a body. He's pretending this and he's pretending that. You very often find people in an erotic band who are so steeped in a horrible feeling that it's all pretense, that they are fascinated with the idea of making everything come real without any pretense. Ha! How are you going to make anything real without pretending, huh? Pretense feels so horrible to them that they now no longer can pretend. This is a symptom of their having been punished for imagining. Whether or not it was lying, whether or not it was imagination, whether or not it was this, or whether or not it was that, it just doesn't matter. If a person is able to lie, a person can imagine. If a person has to tell the truth all the time, he can't imagine. He's caught on the playing field where there's nothing but truth possible. Because, you see, so far as the bric-a-brac of everyday living, the data contained in physics and chemistry and so forth, these are composed of a lot of pretenses. And that's all they're composed of. Now, imagination and consideration are on a parity. You would have to say, of course, that an individual had to be capable of imagining before he could consider. So when you consider imagination itself, you're actually considering something which must be a very close parallel to life itself. It's the ability to consider. Considerations are born out of imaginings. And a person who cannot imagine cannot not only consider, but also, he cannot reconsider. And being unable to reconsider, he is then, of course, pretty well lost. There's the fellow who can't change his mind. He's afraid to consider, and he cannot reconsider. So all he can do is slow to a halt. And this is rehabilitated by many processes. Procedure 30, in particular, works directly at this and freeing it up. But there is a direct series of processes, any and all kinds of processes that you might be able to dream up, that ran into this, whereby you freed the individual's imagination by demonstrating to him he could imagine freely without punishment. And when you've done this, the individual is then again free to imagine. He is below the level of pain, and he is afraid of pain if he imagines.